You're listening to Mix Comic Podcast.
Your host, Mick.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Mick. Today is November 16th, 2014. Yeah, I'm recording a day later than I normally release the episodes, but hopefully you'll forgive me. Anyways, I cover the main Superman books I read at least once a month, and today we'll be covering Superman 34, The Men of Tomorrow, Part 3. So, we'll be getting into that here real shortly. Just wanted to share one small thing. I saw Interstellar twice now, and I loved it. It's amazing. If you're into sci-fi stuff, I'd definitely check it out, and I'm considering doing a podcast on it. Not sure where to put it, though. So, anyways, that's awesome. If you guys have any feedback for this show or any previous shows, please send them to mickginger0@gmail.com, and we'll talk about those. So, thank you for tuning in today. I just want to remind you we're going to do a spoiler warning here because I'll be spoiling everything in Superman 34. For the corrections section, no corrections sent in, but that's okay. If you guys find any, just let me know. I'll put them here. And also, no iTunes reviews to report. So on to the MickRed Network synopsis. Here we go. Superman, Volume 3, Issue 34, The Men of Tomorrow, Chapter 3, Ulysses. And the credits are, this was written by Jeff Johns, John Romita Jr. is the penciler, Claus Jansen inked this issue, Laura Martin was the colorist, Travis Lanham did the lettering, Romita, Jansen, and Martin did the cover, Eddie Braganza is the Superman group editor, and I take this synopsis from dc.wikia.com. From afar, a cloaked man watches Superman's progress throughout his life and marvels that Clark Kent has never given hope. Perhaps he can't. Superman has brought Neil Quinn to visit his long-lost parents and learn about why they sent him away to another dimension. They had been physicists for the military when they were confronted by a scientist named Dr. Margaret Knight, who recruited them away to the Ulysses Research Lab after revealing that their work had gone toward mass killings. However, a reality-eating strange matter escaped in the lab and killed Dr. Knight, and when they thought the lab was seconds from total annihilation, they sent their son to safety in the fourth dimension. However, not long after doing so, the pair discovered a way to seal away the leak and contain the strange matter. Their research was lost, though, along with any means of finding their boy. They never stopped looking, though. Tearfully, Neil admits that he's just happy they're alive. He explains that the first thing he remembers is a blue light. He learned later that it was the interdimensional energy that carried him to the fourth dimension. He was adopted by residents of that dimension, who took him in and named him Ulysses, based on the branding on the vessel that brought him. They raised him as their own, and helped them to understand the changes that he underwent. His adopted father believed that traveling between dimensions imbued him with powers. Both of his adoptive parents have since died. They were once prominent members of the governing assembly of the Great World, a planet of peace that, like the one his parents had sought, peaceful, except for the occasional attack by a citizen of one of the five dimensions. Cleric had been one of those. Fortunately, with Cleric caught, there is no need of him in the fourth dimension. He can remain on Earth with his birth parents. Afterward, Neil's mother shows Superman to the boy's room. She had held on to hope that he'd come back, and maintained the room for all that time, though it is more a boy's room now than a man's. Superman offers that his friend can provide a paperwork trail to account for Neil's whereabouts, without revealing the whole story. For the time being, it would be best to keep Neil's interdimensional history a secret. Bridget admits that she trusts Superman and hopes that he'll stay in Neil's life to acclimate him to life on Earth, and she promises to accept him as family. Elsewhere in the house, Neil's father admits that he had given up hope. Neil's father admits that he had given up on the search some time ago and apologizes. Neil smiles and tells him not to give up on hope. Later, Clark wakes up in his apartment in the early morning and is surprised to find Neil waiting for him, completely awake. He explains that he never sleeps. He wonders if Superman ever dreams and who he is when he dreams. Clark admits that he usually dreams of himself as Clark and not Superman. He has a recurring dream, in fact, where he's back on Krypton as Clark, looking for his Kryptonian parents. When he finds his parents, they beg him to save Krypton before it explodes. And when he tries to become Superman to do it, he can't. Well, actually, when he tries to, he pulls back his shirt to reveal his suit and is not there. Just a little editing there. Then he wakes up. Suddenly, a green light appears. And is emanating from a piece of the mechanical creatures that attacked Metropolis on the previous day. Neil explains that he can track the electromagnetic energy. That comes from it, and can lead Superman to where these beings are coming from. Together, they head to a scrapyard, and Superman assumes that this scrap is what's used for the creation of the creatures that have been showing up the last few issues. He attempts to use his heat vision to burn a hole in the ground, but suddenly loses control of the blast. Neil suggests that he is likely the cause of the disturbance, offering to keep his distance for now. After getting underground, the pair traverse some tunnels which lead to some kind of assembly line. There, a small device attaches itself to Ulysses' head, and Clark is taken aback when Neil unleashes a blast of his own heat vision at him. Superman knocks Neil back and yanks the device from his head, only to hear a voice from behind them. As a masked man introduces himself as the machinist... Well, I gotta edit. A masked man introduces himself as the machinist, unleashing mechanical attack dogs at Superman, and explaining that he intends to sell them, and holding their own against Superman might increase their value. Despite Superman's attempts to destroy them, the machinist comments that he sees everything his creations see, and he is building a library of death in his mind. He unleashes hundreds of these little devices that had controlled Ulysses, calling them mind ticks. And hoping that he'll be able to control Superman. Suddenly, though, the machinist is grabbed by Ulysses, who burns a hole right through his opponent's chest in revenge for controlling him. Superman is horrified at the murder, but the machinist's voice remains, coming from the mask on the body's face. The man behind the mask was innocent, just another man under the control of the mind ticks, and Neil just killed him. Okay, on to some thoughts on the cover. It gets the job done. It shows us the new baddie in the background, and our heroes teamed up and ready for action. But the suits look good, but Superman and Ulysses, they just look kind of awkward to me. The cape doesn't look real dynamic, and of course, the hands of Ulysses look off, but that's not that big of a deal. I just don't really care for this cover very much for some reason. I don't know, it's odd to me. Any variants that grab my attention? There's a Jimmy selfie cover, which these selfies are kind of weird. At first I was like, oh really, we're doing this? We're doing the selfie covers now? Okay. But no, I kind of enjoy it. The Jimmy one is cool, mainly because he's a photographer, and he's getting front and center on the cover of a Superman comic. I thought that was really cool. I like the composition of the cover with him in the front and Superman in the background doing something while he was taking a picture. And the watch getting shown right there was really cool, with the Superman face. The Superman shield on the face of the watch was really cool. But the face gets me a little bit. Looks a little bit off. I don't know if it's like too polished or what, but it's a lot of fun. The one they're calling Cover E has Superman throwing robots around while a silhouetted figure watches. And it looks a little bit off to me too. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of that one. Cover F. Let's see. It's just Superman standing there with a big yellow light around him, and I just want to say this cover is awesome. If I had to nitpick, the crotch is kind of weird, and the cape isn't long enough, but those are just small quibbles. It looks great, and the face actually looks like very good to me. Not like anything I've seen in New 52, but the face does look good. Really like that one. So let's do some scene-by-scene coverage. We got the first scene with the mysterious figure is watching and talking about Clark. He seems very fixated on Clark, this guy. And he's musing about how Clark never gives up hope, though, through things he's been through, and wants to know if he can. And he's also speaking to something behind some doors that's next to him, saying he, whatever's behind there, would surely offer an opinion if given the option. A few things about these panels here. One of them, it's kind of just showcasing a few things from Superman's life. And it's really neat to see. I'm trying to figure out if that's the Doomsday he's fighting here. It's kind of a weird-looking creature that's got him. He's holding on to him, but I'm not sure. But, you know, Superman, he never does give up hope. So what does this mysterious one have in store for Clark? He's been teasing this for 3 issues now. I'm sure we'll get it by the end of the 6th issue, but I just wonder when we're going to learn more about this crazy guy. And also, what's behind this door? Kind of excited to see what it is. I know Superman 35 is out now. I haven't read it yet. So this is the first podcast I'm doing covering Superman where I actually haven't read the next issue. So this is all going to be very new to me. The next scene, we're at Neil's parents' house, Ulysses. And kind of just parents are telling Neil how it all happened, and Neil's looking at baby pictures and stuff. But the parallels to Superman's own story are just completely over the top, ham-fisted. But I don't mind. Matter of fact, I like it. And it's interesting to imagine what must be going through Clark's head. Clark does have some awkward body language here, though, and his shoulders are hunched over, his hands on his knees. And it's a posture that you rarely see of Clark while he's in costume, especially. I don't like it, but I can see why they would do that, just to show you that he's kind of hurting or whatever. Hopefully that's what they're trying to convey. And there's a tense moment here of the mom asking Neil if he can forgive them for what they did. And in guiding reading mode, where I couldn't see the very next frame, I honestly did not know what to expect from Ulysses when he says, "Forgive you, Mom?" And I was like, uh-oh, he's about to just go off on her. But he answers, you know, "I'm just so happy you're alive." And that was nice because, as I've mentioned, I'm just kind of waiting for Ulysses to flip and show that he's evil. But it's not happening yet, which I hope he stays very good, but I'm just kind of expecting him to turn evil or something, I don't know. But, you know, I do want so much for him to stay good. See, then we get a little bit of Neil's origin story. And he's, you know, rocketed through the interdimensional energy onto the great world and adopted by those strange sentient beings, like the Kents, of course. And they mention that his cells were infused by the essence of the fourth dimension, granting him the ability to fly and strength and power to store and release all kinds of energy. That's really cool. Just one thing I'd like to say about this, I'm just now seeing that Clark's brother was killed in the last meeting. So, and it shows a frame of Ulysses just shooting, tearing through him with a laser blast or energy blast from his eyes. We'll come back to that in a little bit. And page 8 in the digital, it says, Ulysses says the great world doesn't need him anymore, so he is home and he's staying there with them. So that's interesting. And we get a scene with Neil's room with Superman and Neil's mom. And Clark says he has a friend that can help provide a paper trail for Neil and warns them to keep Neil's powers a secret. And off the top of my head, I feel like I should know who they're talking about. And maybe it's Batman, but I wonder who else it could be. And then I like this. It's a touching scene where she's holding Clark's hands and calling him family. That was awesome. And I hope these people can become someone for Clark to come home to for a while. And it'd be nice, since he doesn't have the Kents, for him to have some kind of parental-type people to confide in. And while Dad's outside talking to Neil, he says he almost gave up hope. And Neil says, you know, "Don't give up on hope, Dad. Tomorrow will be better." And here we go again with Tomorrow. And these guys are the Men of Tomorrow, and we're getting, you know, Ulysses Research Center was something about building a better tomorrow. So we keep getting this, and I'm loving that there's thing with this theme. And Ulysses remarks about there not being as many stars in the sky at night on the great world. And I love this, because, I mean, Earth, first off, I mentioned I like Interstellar. I've always loved space stuff all my life. I'm not an astronomer, even an amateur astronomer, but I read about the stuff. I keep up with it. I love all that stuff. I try to keep up with any kind of missions that are going around, missions or probes, or manned missions or probes, or just anything, and then stay up with theory about it just for fun. I love it. I always have. And Earth is such an amazing place with a fortunate place in the galaxy. And it's situated in the optimal place in the Milky Way galaxy, with clear views to observe things as far as the beginning of the universe. You know, just, 14 billion light years away. It's just ridiculous how far you can see. And, you know, what if we were situated, like, very near to a nebula, so thick we could barely see out of it? Sometimes I wonder what it would be like to be on a place like that, or a place like the Great World, where that might not be possible. But this is really cool that we can see out of it. It's just neat to hear that and think, oh, wow, you know, because I've thought about that before. What if we weren't positioned just as a great place to be able to observe so much? In this next scene, we got Clark sleeping. And then one of the creepy frame of the issue is him waking up. And I think he's at his apartment. I'm pretty sure the synopsis seemed to think he was too. And we learn here that Ulysses doesn't sleep. For some reason, this makes me a little bit more leery of him. It makes me want to distrust him even more. Though we really have no reason otherwise not to trust him. Ulysses' mom, I thought it must be horrible not to dream, his adopted mom. That was interesting. Since he can't dream. And he asks Clark if he's Clark or Superman in his dreams. And I was like, what a question. You know, maybe I've thought about it before, but I don't think I have. And Clark answers that he's Clark sometimes both. And I'll talk about this dream that he mentions he has, this recurring dream, and I wonder if it's going to play out in this storyline. But he's back on Krypton as Clark, and he's looking for his parents, and he finds them, and they beg him to save it before it explodes. He opens up his shirt, and he's not wearing his suit, and he can't find it. And Neil asks, and then? Clark says, then I wake up. And I wonder where they're going to go with that. You know, what could that mean? If it's talking about something else, unless it's just giving you something to think about. Like, maybe Neil goes back and somehow loses his powers and can't save the great world? I don't know. But then they're interrupted by a piece of the mechanical creatures they fought before, and it's now glowing. But luckily, Ulysses can track that just like he tracked Clark and his energy. Next, we show up at the scrapyard, and Clark can't see because the lead and the trash. But he decides to burn a hole in the ground, and his heat vision goes out of control. Glad to see this come back. We haven't seen this anytime recently. But we can see that Ulysses thinks it's him that's causing it because he can control energy and things like that. So he kind of backs up a little bit. Also in the same scene, Ulysses' arm is glowing red. As he's absorbed it, so that's kind of neat how that just happens. But, so they get into the scrapyard place, and Ulysses is holding a ball of energy that's red, so he can see. He mentions that he can't see in the dark, but Superman can. And they find an assembly line, but before they get to look deeper, a strange gold tick lands on Ulysses' temple, and gives way to, like, an awesome two-page splash of Ulysses hitting Superman with now red heat vision, where it's always been blue. And I can see how it would make sense to be red after absorbing some energy from Superman and his typical red heat vision. But now that it's red, he looks all evil in this scene. Where before, with the blue, he might have looked like a good guy. I appreciate the design choice. Let's see, Ulysses attacks, and Superman tries to defend himself. We already talked about that. So they fight back and forth. He kind of finally knocks out Neil and grabs a bug off his head. And then gets kind of scared. And he gets kind of scared that maybe he thinks he might have hurt or killed Ulysses when the voice behind him begins to speak. And it's this guy who reveals himself as the machinist. This is his factory. And this machinist design is kind of neat. He's wearing like a brown trench coat with a yellow hoodie. And got like a weird metal mask tied to his face, with one eye being a square through the mask, and the other eye that's cut into this mask a horizontal slit, which is, I guess, to be different, I don't know. And also three pieces of metal forming a long metal goatee, and which is just goofy. But anyways, Machinist says he can make creatures that last up to 10 minutes with the Man of Steel. It's going to be worth tens of millions of dollars, which is neat. And these dogs that he makes, they have green glowing robotics showing. So I guess we know who's been making the things from the previous issues, with issue 32 being Titano and 33 the Green Army Men. So it's been the Machinist this whole time. And then he also mentions he can see, like, he makes these creatures and he sells them, and he can see anything that these creatures kill. And he can learn from how they do it and how it works. And he thinks a lot about himself, because he says the greatest library in the world is in his head, which I think Brainiac might have a valid argument with that. Which, something happens here. He begins to throw these mind ticks at Superman. Like, you know, what if I can control you? When Neil gets up, and unleashes a blast onto the Machinist and kills him. Kills him, just like the shot of him killing Cleric earlier. And Superman's asking him, you know, what have you done, or what did you do? And Neil says, I had to stop him. I had to. I killed him. And I'm not sure if he's saying I killed him like, I killed him, or like, I killed him. You know, that's had to be done. You know, I'm not sure what the inflection was there. But he's, when he says that, the Machinist continues to talk. And Superman removes the mask, revealing a dead man with a mind tick and some kind of tech implant on his neck where he was speaking from. And says, Machinist says, you just killed an innocent man. So what does this tell us about Ulysses? And the composition of the I killed him frame is interesting, because you have a Ulysses on one side and Superman on the other, and they're facing each other with the dead one in the middle. And in the background, there is a wall with like this diagonal smoke rising up from the mind ticks that I guess Superman had burned with his heat vision earlier. But that smoke in this frame creates kind of a break in the wall, and it looks like a chasm between these two as they're facing each other. So there's definitely a difference between these two. And I can't wait to see what happens next. I'm going to have to pick it up this week and talk about it. So let's talk about the art a little bit, though. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Good. I liked everything at Neil's family's house. The pencils were sharp. I loved the colors. The faces were good. Everything except Superman's posture, but I've talked about that already. The factory was pretty cool, especially lit by the red energy ball he carried around. And the two-page splash of Ulysses shooting Superman was great. But it did have some ugly parts, too. It's got very skinny legs for Superman, weird hands. And Ulysses beaming the Machinist was a pretty cool shot, too. The bad, I feel like the faces are getting better, at least for my tastes. But I still don't think they're there yet. This is a stretch, though, as I'm beginning to like this art, or he's getting better. I'm not sure. And the ugly, there's no real ugly. I think it all is good or not great in places, that's all. And I'm beginning to feel like, overall, I'm not a fan of Romita's style for Superman. It's great on other things. However, it is getting better. I'm still waiting to have a final decision or feeling on that. And we've got some unanswered and new questions this issue. What will Superman do regarding Ulysses and his just killing this guy? Will Ulysses turn bad is a recurring question I have. Who is the mysterious character that knows and watches Clark? Let's see. And what did this issue bring us? Like I just said, he killed Cleric's brother, it appears. He killed the Machinist. Is he just a straight-out killer? I mean, does he kill? Is he like the Punisher, you know? He's going to kill people. Superman's powers are possibly going out of control, we've seen. We have a new surrogate family for Superman, possibly. And the assembly line that the Machinist used, we got to see that, which I'm sure He'll figure out a way to either use that or continue to use other things to be a factor in the story. And what this issue didn't bring us this time, we didn't get any more Jimmy. We didn't get any more Lois or Jackie Winters, who's been mentioned a few times. Which is interesting. I hope to see them again and see more about Jimmy's story with his family coming up. And for my favorite lines in this comic, I like to cover these each show, and you can send in yours to mcginger0@gmail.com, and we can cover those in the show. But I have two favorite lines from this particular comic. Don't give up on hope, Dad. Tomorrow will be better. Ulysses said that. And then the unknown, mysterious guy at the beginning says, yet Superman never gives up hope. Or at least Clark hasn't yet, has he? Can he? He asks. So, looking forward to see that. And then to round out this segment is I'm going to go to my ratings. And the story, I'm going to give it a 3.5. It hasn't taken a large dip for me. I just have high expectations. And I feel like 3.5 is a good grade. 4 and 4.5 and higher than that would be like just amazing to me. Art, I'm going to go with a 4. I liked it. It was solid. The cover wasn't my favorite. 2.5, it's probably a fair to good rating for me. But yeah, I'll be right back with some news and the question of the show from last week.
I have so many questions.
Then, of course, there's the question on everyone's mind.
Then I'll ask the obvious question.
Start asking questions.
Man of Steel, Answers Insight Commentary is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network. I'm your Man of Steel apologist, Dr. Awkward, and I cover a mosaic of topics for fans who love discussing Man of Steel and the DC Cinematic Universe. Man of Steel, Answers Insight Commentary is a podcast that endeavors to answer the questions, criticisms, and controversies raised by Man of Steel and how it affects the DC Cinematic Universe. Join us at manofsteelanswers.com.
You're the answer, son.
It's coming in on the RSS feed.
You are not alone.
All right, here's some news that caught my eye. You may want to look up the Superman news around the upcoming DC Comics event called Convergence. I don't want to spoil anyone on what could possibly be in there. I've seen a little bit about it on the supermanhomepage.com. And I'll talk about it on this show as we get there. I just don't want to spoil it. Also, for those looking forward to Batman v Superman, again, this is not going to be any spoilery stuff, but worried that Batman will get the upper hand on Superman, the brains behind the Man of Steel Answers podcast has a collection of interviews he put together and threw up on YouTube that should help quell some of that anxiety. And I'll put the link to that in the show notes. That's really good stuff he's doing over there with that Man of Steel podcast. And one more thing, this isn't really news, but I just like 20 minutes ago finished reading Forever Evil, the trade paperback, which I really enjoyed. I didn't know what to expect at all, but I really enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to listening to Michael Bailey's coverage of that on Views of the Long Box. I'll be checking that out here shortly. And so last week's question of the week was I wanted to know what kind of stories you guys came up with your action figures when you were kids. Because, you know, I remember making up some with mine and just had so much fun with that. So I didn't get any replies back from any listeners so much. I got replies from listeners of another podcast my friend and I do. They replied to this question when I threw it out on Facebook. So I'm going to read theirs. DeHaventon Wilson writes in, my Weebles were trapped in their treehouse by a bear from another toy set. Even though I was controlling the action, I remember being terrified for my Weebles. Thanks. You made me dredge up the dorkiest memory from my childhood. My therapist is gonna earn his pay this week. That's hilarious, DeHaventon. And also, it's great to hear from you again, as always. The next one is from Clem Sherman. He says, probably the repeated drama of Optimus Prime at first failing at fighting the Decepticons in order to return and kick some Decepticons somethings as much a regular basis as has happened on the TV show, I think. And then there were millions of tales from Eternia where He-Man has crossed the vile plans of Skeletor and his minions. So basically, the stories I played with action miniatures were the stories of good fighting the bad. Fun as always. I also posed this question on Reddit, and the user named AndSendUnits said, I don't remember having any super wars or battles, but I did like to mummify my action figures and have them awake in into a new time. I would take maybe a G.I. Joe and wrap it in wet toilet paper and then wait. Then he breaks free into an alien environment on his own world. That is crazy. I mean, that is awesome. I don't know how you could come up with that. A lot of fun. Sonic P9, he replied and said, "Oh man, all the stories. I have quite a few. I was an RPG fanatic, mainly Final Fantasy and Legend of Dragoon from the PS1 era, so a lot of my action figure plays were basically made-up RPG games. Yes, this included turn-based battles and writing down hit points and stuff on paper. I have two types of figures to talk about, Gundams and Warhammer. They may not be action figures. Well, Gundams were pretty much action figures, very flexible, could equip stuff, walk, etc. But it was still fun and quite meaningful thing to me." That's really cool. He goes on to continue with a bunch of different stories. Let's see. Said he had two types of figures you can think of. The first set was using the old Gundam wing model kits, about 8 years old. The kits were easy enough to put together, pretty much all snap in pieces, and then stickers for some detail. He was horrible at painting them, but let's see. Not much of a story. Let's see. Played some orcs versus human stuff even before his World of Warcraft days. Sounds like fun. For bases and terrains, used a lot of the Warhammer stuff that came out in the kits, like trees and ruins. Also made a river setting out of cardboard, sawdust, and clear silicon spread that was painted. That's really cool, making your own terrains. I never did that. I just kind of used the stuff I had. The houses, that makes a lot of sense. Very cool. And hey, this question is really interesting to me. So if you guys want to answer this question at any time in the life of this podcast, I'd love to read it or maybe share it here as well. Like just the stories you came up with your toys, what kind of toys you used, what kind of terrain and buildings you used, and just the kind of stuff you came up with. Lots of fun. Thank you for the guys that replied. And we have one listener mail from Mark Lax again. Good dude to write me. He says, "Hey Mick, love the new episode. Thanks for reading my comments. It's always nice to be appreciated as a fan." And I really appreciate you, man. You're like the only guy that's sent me stuff so far. And I really appreciate it. It's good to know that somebody is out there listening. He says, "I give Superman 33 a 4 out of 5. The art was consistent, and I think Junior Jr. is slowly getting used to these characters. And I'm sure in coming months there will be much improvement. Perry still looks like J. Jonah Jameson, but I'm sure I'll eventually get used to it. The story is becoming intriguing with the revelation that Ulysses' parents are still alive. The look on Clark's face when he was remembering the Kents was heartbreaking. Maybe it's me, but they seem to be hinting at some kind of story with the Kents. As for the mysterious hooded figure, well, obviously, they're going to keep us guessing for a while. As far as him having something to do with the Kents remains to be seen. So far, Johns and Romita are doing a good job on this story. I would love to see more stories with the supporting cast and Clark's talks with Perry and Lois, and Jimmy's investigation seems to be going in the right direction. And why is it that writers must put Steve Lombard into continuity when no one liked him when he appeared over 40 years ago? This continues to scratch my head. And yes, we can blame spell check for the eradication instead of eradicator." Oh yeah, from your last one. That's great. He says, "I'll have to keep my eye on that. Anyway, keep up the good work. Can't wait for the next episode. Your pal, Mark Lags." Thank you, Mark. And Lombard, man, I've always hated him too. He's just been a pain, but really, I guess it's good to have people that bring on strong emotions, maybe. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I don't know. But thank you again for writing in, Mark. And anybody else that wants to write in, as I've said, send your feedback to mickginger0@gmail.com. Would love to see your reactions to the Superman storyline. And I'll be talking to y'all again here sometime real soon. Appreciate you listening. Check back for Superman 35 coverage on December 15th. Also, if you would, check out the Facebook page. It's a good place to talk and share ideas about that and see what else would be good for me to cover. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for listening to Mick's Super Comics Cast. If you would like to send feedback to the show, you can email me at mickginger0@gmail.com, and I'll read your mail on the show in the feedback section. You can find the show on Facebook, just search for Mick's Comic Cast, or click the link in the show notes. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for allowing the show to use his song, Our Story Begins. This has been a Mick Red Network production. Find this show and many others at mickred.com. Which Superman assumes must be the scrap for the creation of these creatures? Which Superman assumes must be where the scrap for the creature? Oh wow. Which Superman assumes must be the scrap for the creation of the creatures? Oh, okay, it's the sentence, I guess.